A long time ago, the city of Timbuktu was your destination if you wanted to study and learn. You would have spoken and read Arabic back then, and besides the Holy Quran, you could learn about ethics, mathematics, philosophy, law, and astronomy from among the smartest people in the world. If the collision between Islam, Arabic, and Persian culture is seen as a battle of ideas, then in the golden age of Timbuktu in North Africa, what is now Mali in the 13th century, Islam had the upper hand. Among the most powerful ideas were contained in the libraries of Timbuktu. Those libraries with thousands of precious illuminated manuscripts still exist scattered throughout the North African desert. And for more than a decade, they've been the target of Muslim jihadists trying to remake Mali into a terror state of warped Sharia law. As the story goes, the extremists had declared jihad against anyone and everyone who challenged their vision of a pure Islamic society, and these artifacts, treatises about logic, astrology and medicine, paeans to music, poems idealizing romantic love, represented 500 years of human joy. That passage is from a new book, The Badass Librarians of Timbuktu, written by journalist Joshua Hammer. About 15 years ago, thanks to international funding and the efforts of a young man from the city of Timbuktu, Abdul Qadir Hadira, those manuscripts were brought back and preserved by teams of librarians. Joshua Hammer, the author of The Badass Librarians of Timbuktu, tells us the amazing story about the men and women who risked their lives to save some 350,000 invaluable manuscripts from destruction.
Mali in that era, in the golden era in the 15th and 16th centuries, was the center of a great North African empire. And Timbuktu was the cultural, economic, intellectual capital of that empire. So books were produced there, manuscripts, at a huge rate. And then over the centuries were scattered. The French colonial army invaded and conquered the north of Mali in the 19th century, began seizing manuscripts where they could find them, taking them to museums in Paris, libraries in Paris. So people stashed them away. And they were largely forgotten until about the 1960s when UNESCO began an effort to find them, recover them. And then that was followed by the hero of my book, Abdul Qadir Hadira, a librarian from Timbuktu, who really catalyzed this incredible effort to create libraries in Timbuktu.
What did Abdul Qadir have to go through to get these books past the extremists as time went on and as it got really, really dicey in 2012?
Well, it was an enormously complicated operation that had several stages. The first stage was taking them in the middle of the night by flashlight out of these libraries, stashing them inside private houses, where they remained for several months. Things began really heating up, I'd say 4 or 5 months into the occupation, where you started having the amputations, real serious Sharia law. The next step was to actually get them out of the safe houses in Timbuktu and smuggle them past jihadi checkpoints down to Bamako, the capital of Mali. The third and final stage came when the French military invaded, and the whole north became a war zone. You could no longer travel on the roads. At that point, he had to switch gears entirely and direct an operation down the river, which was pretty much the only safe way to move anything during that time. And even that wasn't so safe.
In this story, did people lose life and literally limb for these books?
Believe it or not, nobody did. People did come close, and certainly there were horrific acts of Sharia justice going on all around them. Public executions, a stoning to death of adulterers. You had regularly hands and feet chopped off in the public squares in Timbuktu and Gao, the main city of the north. But all the manuscripts, with the exception of 4,000 at the very end, got through intact.
And what happened to the 4,000?
Those 4,000 were left behind in a library that had been occupied early on by the jihadists and turned into a military barracks. And they had been coexisting with these volumes and doing their military training and not bothering with them, strangely enough. And then in the last days, as the French were about to seize Timbuktu, in a spasm of vengeance, they grabbed everything they could find, made a big pyre and doused it with gasoline and set them on fire, destroyed everything, reduced them to ashes. So that was a loss of 4,000, but 375,000 survived.
And among the people of Mali who understand the value of this, what does that bonfire represent?
Mali has a fairly high illiteracy rate. It's one of the poorest countries in the world. And yet there is still, even among people who can't read, a recognition of the specialness of Mali, that this very poor country was once at the center of a great intellectual and economic empire, powerful empire in North Africa. And these books are seen as vestiges of that. So this fire, even to people who couldn't read, who didn't know exactly what it represented, was taken as the last and very painful blow meted out by the jihadis in their last desperate effort.
Have you looked at these artifacts?
I have looked at many of them, yeah. When I first saw these manuscripts in 2006, I was taken into somebody's storage room. They'd been in there for I don't know how long. I opened up these wooden chests and I picked up a volume from – must have been from the 15th century. It was bloated, waterlogged. I started turning pages. They were flutter. I was horrified. Pieces of these 600-year-old volumes fluttering away as I turned the pages. You know, I dropped it. Said, I'm not going to do this. But, you know, on the other hand, there are some that are remarkably well preserved. There has been this tremendous effort over the last 10 years, this consciousness raising and money pouring in from international foundations to preserve what's left. I mean, the ones that are particularly astonishing are these illuminated manuscripts with wonderful, intricate Islamic designs and some with even representational art. I mean, human form obviously cannot be shown in Islamic art, but that hasn't prevented the artists and scribes from that period from just adorning their volumes with breathtaking art.
And what kind of books are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking about a mix of Islamic and secular volumes. That was the unusual thing about Timbuktu. So we're talking about beautiful Qurans, the Hadith, the sayings of the Prophet, alongside poetry, romantic poetry, science, medical volumes, history, books about sex, all sorts of subjects that the jihadists found particularly heinous and wanted to stamp out.
So Abdul Qadir and the badass librarian saved this treasure, but Mali, can it be saved?
Mali has not recovered from this, one of the most traumatic episodes in its history. The French came in 2013 and they were effective. They killed a large number of jihadis. They drove them out of the cities, but the desert is still there. There are jihadis still around. They've already conducted a few horrific terrorist operations in Bamako and elsewhere. I don't think they're capable of recapturing the north, but the instability is likely to go on for a long time.
But AK-47s and jihadis are no match for the badass librarians in this case.
Yeah, in this case, this is a rare case, but it gives a bit of hope.
Joshua Hammer is author of The Badass Librarians of Timbuktu. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
The Takeaway is supported by TIAA. Whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to helping those who do good do well. Learn more at TIAA.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.